This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
The last thing they saw was someone they trusted. You're tuned in to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreeke.
The circus has come to town. Lori Vallow Daybell, or she just wants to be known as Lori Daybell now. Take the Vallow out. She's standing by her man, even though he threw her under the bus in his trial. But hey! The world is her oyster. She can easily cut and paste things out as she pleases to make her collage of reality what she wants it to be. Now she is acting as her own attorney, and I'm sure she thinks she's doing a great job, despite what we all saw the other day in court. Joining me to discuss the latest revelations in the case of Lori Daybell and her upcoming trial, Robin Dreeke, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. You watched it. I watched it. I think a lot of people watched it. And this is just like the trailer for the upcoming movie. What's your thoughts on where the hell this is going?
So she started speaking from the clip I saw right away, and I got to tell you, I had such a low bar for her that it's easy to exceed it. So she did a very little bit better than I thought. I literally thought she's going to get in there and start seeing demons running around. I have such a low opinion of her as a cognizant human. I thought she's going to start saying that her kids are sitting with her next to her and they're on her side. I'm not shitting you. Right?
I wouldn't be surprised.
But she was a little more coherent than I thought she would be. She clearly doesn't know the law. But the thing that really started striking me very quickly after she started her rambling was, boy, what a good patient judge. He's sharp. I was a little I thought, you know, when he went to prosecution and asked the question, I thought I was expecting a little bit more sharpness and a little bit better articulation from prosecution on this. And it kind of fell a little flat for me when she responded to one of the judge's questions, which is fine. It's a pretty solid case. And the other thing that struck me too was Lori kept referring to we. I want to know who that we is. Because this happens. So I know, like in the Alec Murdaugh case, he's providing services to his fellow prisoners as a lawyer inside the clink. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if she's got someone on the inside, some lawyer that's incarcerated with her that might be helping her. I was curious, again, I know people probably know, I was curious who was sitting with her helping her prepare her statement, because it was a decent-ish statement for someone who's never done law before. Again, I was expecting her to be batshit crazy in there.
Yes.
because she is batshit crazy, but she wasn't. Ish. But again, patient lawyer. I think we'll see how long his patience lasts.
What was your reaction?
I mean, judge, I mean.
Yeah. What was your reaction to her comment initially? One of the first things we saw in court was the judge addressing her as Lori Vallow Daybell, and she immediately interrupts. Judge, can we change this? Can we change it in the proceedings to just be Lori Daybell? I mean, she didn't like profess her love to Chad at that moment in time, but I mean, that sure speaks a lot about what's going on. I was almost expecting her to say, let's just stick with Lori Vallow going forward. Quite the opposite.
Yeah, it's she's a puzzle within a puzzle, because you can think that she's doing something for one reason, but again, you have to have that deep empathy, not empathy as like, oh, poor Lori, but, you know, really deep empathy is like see life through that really twisted mind of hers. The only thing I'm thinking of the name issue is, remember, she doesn't do things out of sentiment. She's not a sentimental person. She's high in psychopathy, so there's nothing there. So it's some sort of manipulation tactic to me. And so the manipulation tactic, the only thing I can think of is that she's a different person than the one who did that crime. I'm this person now doing this thing, and I'm defending myself here. So I think she's trying to maybe give the image of, you know, trying to manipulate people into thinking that was then, this is now. That's who I was then. This is who I am now. This is a different trial. So I think that might be the attempt of what she's doing. I don't think it has anything. I think it has less to do with Chad, because again, she doesn't have the capacity for that kind of emotional connection or disconnection with anyone. She is just all in on her.
Yeah. It makes me wonder what the defense strategy is going to be of Lori in this upcoming trial, because she's now made public statements to her son, Colby on his podcast, and she knew it was a public interview. He said this is an interview. Let the world hear what you want to say, and she came out in that and said, here's what happened to your brother and sister. She claims that Tylee accidentally killed JJ and then killed herself out of shame. I mean, it's completely insane, but this is what, you know, she's telling herself, I guess, to justify what happened. Says she walked in, saw this happened, and then walked away, and then Chad and whoever else came in and took care of it, and she never had to worry about it again. And by the way, to add another level of insanity, she tells her son, you know, Tylee wanted to be cremated to somehow justify her melted corpse in a bucket in the backyard of Chad's house. I'm going to guess that may be introduced into this case, possibly by herself, if she's already said that. If not, the prosecution going against her, going, wait a minute, if you're saying something completely different here in court, here's what you just told your son. Do you think we're going to see that narrative being brought up here?
I think we're going to see a lot of crazy shit. Oh, my God. I hate laughing because these two beautiful kids are gone.
I know.
But you, she is so bad. Yeah, I am so excited. I think everyone is, because this is our first attempt. I mean, when you have psychologists, forensic psychologists that take their time, they get the authorities, they get the permission to go inside a prison and talk to batshit crazy people like this so they can do their research, so they can get data points, and they can then, you know, be the great mental health people that they are. We're going to get a firsthand look at crazy like I think we've never had it before, because we're going to see inside this brain. It'll be interesting to see, and I think it'll break down. I think she's probably going to start with the real world, and I say real world, real Lori world, material world, like things, rationalization of, like you just said, one kid kill another kid, guilt, suicide, all those things, to get it all off of her. But I'll be really, really curious about too when the super crazy comes in, when the evil demons and dark spirits take over, because it'll be, because when you get under stress, your core of who you are is what really comes out. So as she gets a sense, if she ever gets a sense that she's losing, as she gets a sense that she might not be doing as well as she thought she was going to be doing, that's where we're going to see some real core behaviors of her come out. And I think we'll probably throughout the course of this see a shift. We're going to see it's probably going to be starting out probably pretty like she had, you know, she had her documents and she's reading her statements. I think it's going to start out like that, but I think she's going to go off the rails at some point. It'll be really interesting how fast she goes off the rails, and then how fast the judge will then say, you can no longer defend yourself because you are too batshit crazy.
And that's where I feel like we're headed in this. I feel like we're going to get to a point where it's like, okay, why did we do this? Why did we do this lead up to this when we knew that she's not competent to stand trial? I mean, we're just watching her the other day. She's arguing about her extradition to Arizona as if somehow that plays a part in the murders. I mean, that was like her main point that she was trying to argue to the judge about getting information about her extradition because it makes no sense to her. It's like, did you read the grand jury indictment? Like, it's all right there. But she seems clueless to it, almost as if, I mean, she has the information, but it's not sticking to her wall. It's going in one ear and out the other, to be just kind of blunt about it, quite literally. And I wonder if that is, I don't know if that's surprising or not, considering I'm guessing that's just a survival technique. She cannot process the reality of what she was involved in and what she did. So if she's going to try and defend herself, she's going to have to take that information in and find some way to spin it. But if she can't even take it in, That's where we're kind of left with like a blank slate. It's like they gave her a giant document with all these words on it and all these issues on it. And she comes back going, I got a big giant empty ream of paper right here. Here's what I have. It's like, no, we gave you this. And she's just sitting there with absolutely nothing.
Well, I think she went through it and did what she always does. Where am I the victim?
Yeah.
That's it. It's pretty simple. I didn't do it. Everything I did was justified. I didn't do anything wrong, and I'm a victim. And so the only thing she could pull out of that big document, if she could even read the entire thing, is remember, I said to this last time, Chad's got about 3 marbles rolling around, and Lori's got about 2 upstairs. Mm-hmm. And so her ability to do anything and take in information like that is, she can't. And so I think she perused that thing and found out anywhere she could where she's a victim, play the victim, and look for the sympathy to manipulate the court onto her side to get her way in anything. Because I think in her mind, if she can get any win whatsoever, she wins. And I think this might be the small win she is trying to go for because she really doesn't understand the law. She doesn't understand anything. I have a hard time doing this. And I was around law enforcement for 22, 25 years.
Yeah.
And so I can understand, that's why this is like so laughable to me. I would never in a million years even entertain the thought of doing this to myself, representing myself in there. And there she is. I got this.
It takes a special type of person to do that. People like Ted Bundy, people like Sarah Boone, and now someone like Lori Daybell, who thinks it's a great idea.
I got this.
What a crazy, unhealthy level of confidence that must be. I mean, it's good to be confident. It's good to believe in yourself, when you have reason to. But this, I think, would be like the epitome of having confidence when you shouldn't have confidence.
This is a human being with 0 loving critics in her life saying, hey, you might not want to do this.
But even if there were, I don't think she would listen. It's going to be very fascinating down when this goes on. And I think you're right. I think she's going to get backed into a corner at some point in this trial. Because essentially, it's like she's on the stand the whole time. It's not just a few moments where she's going to go up and represent herself. She is on trial. She is in the spotlight the whole damn time. And she's not going to have a clue as how to handle witnesses or cross or do anything. I mean, this is going to be just one giant mess of a judge saying, can't do that. Objection, objection, objection.
So my analogy on this one is a lot of people love to watch NASCAR and races because you love to watch a good race and there's going to be a wreck in there. And it's going to be pretty, hopefully everyone survives it, but it's a wreck. People like seeing some drama. So this is like watching the Indianapolis 500. Lori's driving every single car and every single car is going to wreck. You just don't know when, you don't know the sequence, and you're just going to watch a nothing but a huge catastrophe the entire time. This is going to be, I think, I think watching this is going to be more interesting than OJ.
I'm going to say this. I'll one-up you on that. It's either like a demo derby.
Yeah.
Or it's like Lori Vallow driving a giant snowplow against traffic in the Indianapolis 500. And there she is around every turn just to knock whatever's going to run directly into her out. And it's not going to end well.
But let's bring it back to the most important thing. At the end of the day, the likelihood of her winning anything is slim to none. And hopefully there's more justice for those 2 children. And victims feel that justice has been served to the best of its ability. Nothing can ever undo what she did to those 2 children, but hopefully a little bit more peace will be found in some, but definitely not in her.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in, and then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today, Premium Plus, on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today, Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today, Premium Plus, on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and savor every twisted detail without interruption.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.